I look to Saudi Arabia really as kind of being the linchpin of all of the issues surrounding the de-dollarization and really the dollar hegemony. And it's been that way since 1974, where every country on the planet, Michelle, has had to own dollars in order to buy oil. That was the deal we struck with the Saudi Kingdom. And by extension, OPEC, who has really for almost 50 years exclusively, about 90% of all the oil sales across the globe have been in dollars. And this has created a synthetic demand for the dollar. It's a big deal. And it really is what, in large part, has given us, or at least to a very large degree, the world reserve status or the petro status. Now, subsequently, we've seen some moves by Saudi Arabia that to me are very alarming. When we last met, we talked about the fact that they had joined the Belt Road Initiative along with all of the other OPEC countries. And that's the largest infrastructure project in human history. Big deal. Right now, that represents almost 75% of human population, about 50% of global GDP. We talked about how they had applied for the BRICS membership. And that's kind of where we left off. Subsequently, they have also applied for the Shanghai Cooperation Organization. This is a very, very big deal. And also dovetails into what James Rickards has mentioned about what's going to transpire August 22nd, which we'll get to in a moment. But the Shanghai Cooperation Organization is the largest regional military and financial organization in the world. It represents about 60% of the Eurasian landmass and 40% of global GDP. It's very significant in and of itself. And with Saudi Arabia joining BRICS, the Belt Road, and now the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, we can see the movement that they are making. We can see what's important to them. We can see how they are pushing away from the Western influence and getting very close with some very, very powerful entities, influential entities that are growing more so by the moment. They also applied for the BRICS New Development Bank. And while in Davos at the meeting, just after you and I last had our interview, they told the world that they would be open to accepting other currencies for oil. Now, when we look at the BRICS phenomenon, it's a big deal. It is. I think it's a huge deal. I think what really is going to make it very big is what James Rickards has told the world, that on August 22nd, he expects the Shanghai Cooperation Organization and the Eurasian Economic Union to join forces with the BRICS. Now, I find this to be interesting because I just spoke at the Rule Symposium, and in preparation for my presentation, I wanted to see how many countries had signed up for BRICS. When I last did the interview, the Rule Symposium a year ago, July, I believe there were 16, and now there's 41. Everywhere I would look, I would see 41. But in counting the countries on the list that these articles would show 41, I would only come up with 25. Where are the other 16 countries? Well, if you realize that all of the countries in the Shanghai Cooperation Organization have been formally invited to this meeting in Johannesburg, and you strip out those countries that have already applied or expressed interest to BRICS, along with the same thing with the Eurasian Economic Union, and apply them to the 25, you get darn near 41. What you have here, Michelle, if you put together the Belt Road Initiative, the BRICS, the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, and the Eurasian Economic Union, you're damn near close to 85% of human population. And this is a growing trend in motion. It is a very, very big deal. And I guess what they're doing is they're being very methodical in the way that they are laying the groundwork, the foundation, to when they flip the switch, they have laid, I think, the proper foundation to do it the right way. And so whether or not we see a gold-backed currency in a few weeks or in a few months or next year, to me, the alliance that is being built, this alliance that represents the majority of human population that is not going green, is a very big deal. And Saudi Arabia only adds to that significance with their movements nestling into these organizations.
Okay, a lot to break down just there, Andy. And of course, last time we spoke, we were also discussing how the Saudis signed a military cooperation and protection deal with the Russians following the withdrawal by the U.S. from Afghanistan, which was arguably a huge disaster and a debacle. So also a point that sort of pushed the Saudis away from the U.S. and the implications there. But let's focus on this idea that you're saying we're going to have the potential announcement of 85% of the world's population coming together in some kind of an alliance. That is what you're expecting to be the big announcement coming out of this BRICS summit?
Yeah, well, and again, now let me clarify something. All of the entities on the Belt Road Initiative are not all part of the BRICS. They are not all part of the Shanghai Cooperation Organization or the Eurasian Economic Union, but you can see that they are all on the same team. They are all moving towards the same direction. And to me, when you realize that all of the OPEC countries are on the Belt Road, it even becomes more significant. But that group of countries that are all pulling in the same direction do indeed represent 85% of human population. But fairness.
But what is that direction, Andy? What is that direction? What is keeping this alliance together? I get it. It's a move away from dollar hegemony. But what is the common denominator? Because it surely is more than we just don't want the dollar.
Yeah, absolutely. But I think what it is, it's the first chance that these countries have really to break free. And they're doing things, Michelle, in a way that is specifically cooperative, mutually cooperative. They are, as an example, China has brokered a peace deal between Iran and Saudi Arabia, two countries who traditionally have really not liked each other whatsoever. In fact, they're building embassies in each other's countries. They are building the first ever railway between Iran and Iraq. They are going into these countries and they are building, China behind most of it, they're building railways and bridges and maritime channels. They're building oil refineries and gold mines, and they are showing ways for these countries to industrialize and become build their middle class, have the things that the rest of the world has envied the United States for forever. China is going and saying to these countries, let us help you industrialize, let us help you get to a place that you want to be joined together. But it's further than that, too. I mean, we now see that Iran is working alongside of Saudi Arabia, the United Arab Emirates, Qatar, Bahrain, Iraq, Pakistan, and India in building the BRICS Naval Alliance. You know, you're talking two of the three largest nuclear arsenals in the world. You're talking 15% of all the known gold reserves. And really, I would argue a whole hell of a lot more than that, as they're not very forthright in terms of what they own. But you have countries that are building an infrastructure in terms of cooperation, in terms of a potential growing of their economies, in terms of military arrangements and agreements. All of the things are being put into place for them to, I guess you could just simply say, start a new system that is free from the Western hegemony. And I think that's a very big deal to the majority of these countries who look at the weaponizing of the dollar and wonder if they're on the wrong side of the United States and what their plans are, or the West and what their plans are, where roughly 30% of the world's countries are being sanctioned in some way by the G7. Well, these countries, I think, look at this as an opportunity where strength in numbers and unity and doing things of mutual cooperative benefit, this is a big deal for all of them.
I mean, there is,
the media would let us believe.
There is definitely a strong alliance building with various synergies and mutually beneficial infrastructure being built and a new relations being created with unlikely partners, as you said, former foes, Saudi Arabia and Iran, resuming diplomatic relations after that agreement with China. But is there really that much unity in this organization, right? Is there really a bigger agenda, a big soul agenda? Because going into this meeting, There was talk that just amongst the BRICS and perhaps adding more members, there would be this common currency. That was a big deal leading up to the summit. We were getting mixed messages. Russia and Brazil indicated that they wanted this common currency backed by commodities, that it is being developed, and that it's essential if the bloc needs to challenge the Western dominance of global finance, as you just said. But then we heard from South Africa's ambassador at large for Asia and the BRICS, Anil Suklal, ahead of the meeting, saying that there's never been talk of a BRICS currency. It's not even on the agenda. But he said that what they are trying to do is to deepen trading in local currencies and settlement in local currencies. But then we heard from India saying that they weren't even that in favor of a common currency in the first place, that the rupee has been doing well against the dollar, and they seemed to back off the idea of some kind of common currency. So let's just focus on the idea of the common currency. You feel that it's safe to say that we're not going to hear about that coming out of this immediate meeting?
Yeah, I think there's probably a fairly significant chance that they're not going to announce a common currency. But I believe that it is 100% something that will happen. And I think it's something that is unavoidable. You're right. They're all building their own central bank digital currencies. In fact, if you take the entire, all of the countries that comprise 95% of the gross domestic product in the world, they all have CBDCs that are in development. And so every single country is going to have their own CBDC. You have China, the United Arab Emirates, and one other country that last year developed the Project M-Bridge, M is in money, that allows these currencies to trade amongst one another. But indeed, at some point, I do believe that they will issue a common settlement currency with the BRICS, and it will be backed by something. Look, let's go back to what we talked about last time. Why would the Bank of International Settlements have reclassified gold as a tier one asset if it wasn't going to be significant and used in some form of stability backing the system? Why, after almost 80 years, would they have chosen gold? And why have all the central banks repatriated the gold? And why are the central banks buying more gold over the last 18 months than at any time in history? And of course, the countries that represent the RICS in BRICS, Russia and India and China and South Africa, and you can throw in Saudi Arabia, they all have been voraciously accumulating gold for the last few years. And so, look, I think it's inevitable. It will happen regardless of the pushback, regardless of the rhetoric. I think there's something to be said for not being completely transparent with the rest of the world until all of the pieces are put in place. But you don't have to be particularly astute to see the crumbs that are being laid at our feet. And so, yeah, look, Michelle, I think that you're right. There will be individual currencies, but I think they're also going to trade with one another on a platform that sidesteps the SWIFT system, sidesteps the ability of the West to sanction them. But when they really want to accentuate their position, they will issue a common settlement currency in the BRICS. Now, you know, when we talk about settlement currency, James Rickards believes that they're going to issue or challenge with a reserve currency at some point, and to do so by issuing a bond market that would trade amongst 20 plus, 30 plus countries in a gold or commodity backed currency. Now that's down the road.
Yeah.
But that's something that I think would very easily be accomplished as step two once the BRICS currency comes into place. So I get whether or not it's issued in August to me is irrelevant. And you know, they've been pretty open about the fact that this is something that they've been thinking about for a very long time now. And I quite frankly don't know where Mr. Rickards heard that it would happen on July 22nd or August 22nd, but really to me, it doesn't really change anything. You can see where they are going and the speed at which they are coalescing. It's coming.
It's coming, and I hear your point that maybe it's just some misdirection to not confirm that this is happening at this particular meeting as they get their ducks in the row and get better prepared for this. But there is a number of issues even with this alliance. And we've had guests on the show, Andy, that like to say don't confuse desire with ability, right? Because previous attempts by the BRICS have not gone very well. They've had some pretty ambitious initiatives to parallel Western infrastructures, and that's failed. They had ideas like developing a BRICS credit rating agency and creating a BRICS undersea cable. That didn't materialize. And then back in 2014, when the BRICS launched the New Development Bank, the founding agreement outlined that the operations would provide financing in the local currency of the country in which the operation takes place. But to date, the bank remains heavily dependent on the dollar for its survival. The local currency doesn't even represent, 20% of the bank's portfolio. So there are still issues that, even though they may want to do this, so far they haven't had a great track record of really coming together. And then there's also the question of, who takes the lead here, Andy? Who do you see really spearheading all of the initiatives? Because their cooperation is great and wonderful, but there's usually a top dog. Is that China? Who takes that position?
I mean, China's the one behind the Belt Road Initiative. One of the things that I admire about the BRICS is they rotate their presidency this year. It's in South Africa. They do so each year so as to not have one voice dominate the rest. In my mind, I see Saudi Arabia as really being a very, very important cog in that event, in that movement. Because when Saudi Arabia says to the world, hey, we've decided to not take dollars as a sole settlement currency for oil anymore, you've signed an executive order to go green almost entirely by 2050, 50% by 2030. You've told us that. They have to look at the fact that we have $155 trillion in debt, both funded and unfunded, with only $5 trillion in assets. What is the way that you pay that off? You pay that off either by inflation or production or massive increase in taxes. And I don't think the production or the taxes are the way to go. So it's inflation. They will choose to inflate their way out of this problem. Why would Saudi Arabia want anything to do with selling their oil for a currency that is going to be inflated, for a bond market that absolutely destroyed the bondholders last year, and a country that is going green? When we see that moment, where Saudi Arabia says we're going to take other currencies for oil, the lack of settlement in the dollar will have very substantial effects and will make a thrust by the BRICS, I believe, much more sustainable and attainable. And look,
okay,
you know, people say who trusts China and the BRICS, but who trusts the United States anymore? And full faith and credit, we're broke, we're insolvent, we're $155 trillion in debt. We can talk about all of the things that are compromising the trust in this country. So I agree with everything you're saying. This is not going to be an easy overnight endeavor. Look, this has been going on for 17 years. The BRICS is not a brand new phenomenon, but they have been gaining momentum and gaining steam. And I think what makes it work, what will make it work, the glue that will make all of this work, is indeed having a currency that is backed by commodities, presumably gold, using distributed ledger technology or blockchain to show the veracity and the immutability of it, giving it authentic, trustworthy transparency to the rest of the world, if done right.
Okay, before we get to that goal, let's talk about the near term. From this upcoming summit, what do you expect with regards to Saudi Arabia?
All roads point to them being appointed a full member of the BRICS.
And so add another S to BRICS.
Excuse me?
Add another S to BRICS.
Correct. Yeah, absolutely. And that's a very, very, very big deal. You have them applying right now. They are a dialogue partner in the Shanghai Cooperation Organization. They are in the BRICS New Development Bank. So yes, if they get appointed to BRICS, it's like I've said on many of the podcasts I do, it's like a game of Jenga. You keep pulling out these pieces of the dollar hegemony one by one by one, this being a very big one. You know, at what point does it tumble? To see a country push away the way that Saudi Arabia is doing, when you look at what happened to to Iraq or to Libya. You have to wonder, you know, are they going to wait until everything is in place before they make that announcement? And I believe they will.
And that announcement being to not...
happening. I'm sorry?
And that announcement being regarding the petrodollar, not joining the BRICS.
Correct. But this is just another step in the pathway to making that full commitment.
So, Andy, let me ask you this. If they say we're not just accepting dollars, and there's already been some signs that they're accepting like yuan backed by gold, but it's still dollar denominated in the sense that we're still pricing what the equivalent is to be paid in gold or in yuan or in rupees by what the price of oil is in dollars, right? I mean, that's still the benchmark in terms of how we determine the value of a barrel of oil to then be converted to other forms of payment. So what happens then? I mean, is the dollar in your scenario no longer what denominates the price of oil and other commodities? And if so, what does?
Yeah, well, I mean, that would ultimately be the delineation. We're going to value oil and price oil in a new settlement currency, the new BRICS settlement currency, perhaps. Or we're going to sell it in yuan, which is immediately convertible into gold on the Shanghai Gold Exchange. Maybe we'll peg it to gold, ounces of gold.
But I'm saying they're still pricing it in dollars. Like even selling it in yuan and pegging it to gold, it's still effectively priced in dollars. That's still the value that it's ascribed.
So the value will just be much
converted back to, as I say, yuan, converted back to what that means in gold, which is also priced in dollars. So because
right,
the dollar
denomination
for so many of these commodities, how does that get replaced?
Until it's not. I mean, you look at the overt manipulation for gold and silver on the COMEX. You could argue, how the hell did oil get to negative $40 a barrel? Because of the manipulation and the gambling on the commodity exchanges. Until it's not. Until there are exchanges out there that, like the Moscow Exchange or the Shanghai Gold Exchange or whatever exchanges take the lead. And, you know, I think when you look at the way that things are valued, in commodities are valued or priced, you have the tail wagging the dog, where the futures market is creating or defining the price of the underlying commodity. It's not supposed to be that way. And I think when you talk about an entity like the Moscow Gold Exchange, they were very open in saying, we're going to, you know, build this exchange and its credibility to combat the, you know, the manipulation and the suppression of the Western markets of the LBMA and the COMEX. So yes, it is until it isn't. And a term that I talk about a lot is logarithmic decay, little by little by little by little, then all at once. So each one of these events that we see is just another chip out or another piece out of the Jenga tower, little by little by little. Yes, it's still priced in dollars. Debt still needs to be resolved and paid for in dollars. But will it be rolled over in dollars, or will it find a new place to put their money? Will it be in gold? Will it be in another currency that will allow these countries to trade more freely with one another until we see a common BRICS currency? Look, all of these things, I think, Michelle, are very fair. They're fair pushback. They're fair questions. It's not going to happen overnight, but you can see the acceleration, the cohesion that ultimately is going to lead to that, in my opinion. So little by little by little, and then all at once. And if you look close, you can see that's already happening.
No, you definitely can see the dots. And what I like about you, Andy, is I like to push back on your theories. Not that I necessarily disagree, but like to get a counter argument. And one of the big points that I've always made is the U.S. really going to stand by and do nothing? So far, the Biden administration hasn't made many comments about these huge remarks from other countries saying we're ditching the dollar. But should we have a different administration, or even with this current administration, what kind of reaction do you expect from the U.S.?
Well, I mean, you could say that the actions that they have done already would be the textbook for how to lose your reserve status or how to certainly diminish the significance of it by weaponizing the dollar, by pushing back and pushing away from Saudi Arabia, telling them we're going green. And it is the protection of the Saudi kingdom and the valuing of oil and dollars that has given us this significant privilege for 50 years. They're doing everything they can, in my mind, to incentivize the rest of the world to do this, to find a safety in numbers. And that, you know, it's interesting. Are they going to push? They should have done it already. They should have pushed.
This is a bigger point that I know you've said, that this all could be potentially intentional or planned. I do want to unpack that at large. But in terms of immediate reaction following the summit, immediate reaction, before we get into the idea that this could all be potentially intentionally or planned efforts to dethrone the dollar and your argument for that. We have the summit happening in August. For argument's sake, Saudi Arabia joins, and the talk to continue to move away from the dollar continues and accelerates. In near term, do you expect any kind of U.S. reaction?
I mean, no.
No.
What can they do at this point? I mean, I don't know. Look, they sent Janet Yellen there. They sent Kissinger there. He's almost 100 years old. What can they do at this point? What can we do? Are we going to threaten military action? I don't know really what we can. We're going to sanction them, which is only going to further their resolve. I think we've already crossed the Rubicon. I don't know that there is a lot that we can do to normalize these relations. Once you let the weaponizing of the dollar genie out of the bottle, you can't put it back in.
Yeah.
And then you throw into the mix the fact that, you know, we are grossly mismanaging the world reserve currency. I don't know, Michelle. I don't know. Well, exactly what the West can do to push back or to mitigate this growing cohesion of countries. I'm sure they'll try. I'm sure they'll do something. But in the end, is there really anything that they can do to stop this trend? I would argue no.
Okay, but we did, for argument's sake, see a bit of a backpedal from India following Modi's visit to the U.S. Coincidence, perhaps. They seemed to be less enthusiastic about the idea of their own reserve currency after the visit here. And again, a lot of this also hinges on the war between Russia and Ukraine, because Russia is obviously the R in BRICS. If that war plays out not to Russia's advantage, what does that mean for this alliance?
I don't think it changes anything. I mean, 85% of the world is still trading with Russia. I don't think it really will mean anything whatsoever, quite frankly. And I think that this is a trend that will continue no matter how the war in Russia plays out. And I think a lot of the world looks at that war differently than the West does. And I'm not confident one bit that an outcome where Russia backpedals will change anything in terms of the alliance. In fact, I think it will only strengthen it as these countries will see exactly what happens when you get on the wrong side of the West and the NATO alliance. And this is exactly the rallying cry that is bringing everybody to the table. So, yeah, I mean, look, Michelle, these are very, certainly very challenging questions that you ask. But when you talk about how things, perceptions can change, look, France was right there with us in 2022 when we sanctioned Russia for this war. And now they go in, Macron goes in and meets with Xi Jinping and says, hey, you know, we're not going to get involved if the U.S. wants to try and intervene with Taiwan. We can't do anything with the Ukraine. Why should we do anything there?
Yeah.
They signed a 51-point agreement from 5G technology to military engagement and then bought the huge deal liquid natural gas deal with Yuan. So things change very, very quickly. Alliances change, decisions change. And what is India supposed to say? And how much of what we are hearing from Bloomberg and Reuters about these meetings is really actually true? And, you know, so I don't think that's that big of a deal at all, quite frankly.
All right, fair enough. And we also have Macron reportedly wanting to join the summit, right? Saying,
yes, I think he was turned down. I do believe he was. But yes, that's the point.
Well, yeah, he wanted to join this BRICS summit and apparently they turned him away, at least for this one. Who do we expect to be at the summit in terms of non-BRICS members?
Well, all of the members of the Shanghai Cooperation Organization and all of those countries and of the Eurasian Economic Union.
So they're all sending delegates?
Yes, they are.
Who are the countries in those organizations?
Let me tell you here. I happen to know that the Shanghai Cooperation Organization includes China and India, Kazakhstan, Kyrgyzstan, Pakistan, Russia, Pakistan, Uzbekistan, they're all full members. Afghanistan, Armenia, Azerbaijan, Bahrain, Belarus, Cambodia, Kuwait, Maldives, Mongolia, Myanmar, Nepal, Saudi Arabia, Sri Lanka, Turkey, Turkmenistan, and Qatar are all in various status as dialogue partners and observers. And I believe they have all been extended an invitation to the meeting. This is a big deal when you get this growing coalition of countries, and many of which who have been very U.S. friendly, that are now being invited to this meeting. And if indeed they all do sign on, to me, that is the most significant thing I take away from the meeting. It's not the common currency. I believe in my soul, from everything I see and everything I've read and all of the crumbs they are telling us about, that's coming, whether it be now or down the road, so be it. But it is coming.
And even as you say, if we don't get this currency announced or launched or even discussed at the summit, it is happening down the line. But what we do know will be discussed is this idea to continue to trade amongst themselves, to use their own currencies and to not use the dollar. If this bloc expands and those trade agreements continue leaving out the greenback, what kind of reaction do you expect to see in terms of the strength of the dollar? What would be the market implications if, say, after this meeting, more trade agreements are signed and more members are added to the bloc? And that implies less trade in dollars.
Ultimately, less trade is less demand, more supply means the value of the dollar has to go down. And as the value of the dollar goes down, I would expect to see higher interest rates. This is something that is a chain reaction. And look, when you realize that a country like China still has a few trillion dollars in U.S. assets, they're not going to cut off their nose to spite their face and absolutely collapse the dollar. But this is something that when the pieces are put into place and when they decide to make that move, a guy like Mike Adams calls it Operation Sandman, where 125, 30, 40 countries have already agreed to dump the dollar at once when the time is right, whenever that is. So I don't know when that moment is, but what I am very certain of is that you can see a very distinct progression away from the dollar, little by little by little, then all at once. It's like a waterfall. Where are we on that logarithmic decay graph? Are we way back at the top, or are we starting our trend downward? And, you know, little by little, you see all of these countries settling in other currencies, like Brazil, you mentioned. They're the second largest exporter of corn in the world. When you see all of this settlement outside the dollar that used to settle in dollar, that's significant. Creates less demand for the dollar, creates an environment where the dollar has to fall and interest rates have to rise to compensate. It's not good. But when that all at once moment happens, I don't know. I don't know when it happens. But I see it as something that to me is, albeit inevitable, at some point down the road.
Right. And as Rick Rule likes to say, what is inevitable is not necessarily imminent. Now, Andy, you've said recently that you think that this trend to de-dollarize, to push countries away from the dollar, to start questioning the full faith of the U.S. government that backs the dollar, may in fact be intentional or planned. Now, yes, granted, it's speculation, but you've implied that if you were trying to get the dollar dethroned as the global currency, that this is exactly how you would do it, that the events that we've seen unfold recently domestically in the U.S. would be exactly how you would do it, and that this could be an internal initiative. So we're going to take a break and we're going to discuss that very intriguing and compelling part in part two of this interview. Stay with us. We will be right back.
Begin your path to financial freedom. Gain up to a $7,000 bonus on us. Register and use promo code. Deposit and enjoy a 7% bonus. Available now. Link in the description.
But on August 22nd, 2023 of this year in South Johannesburg, South Africa, the BRICS nations are meeting. BRICS stands for Brazil, Russia, India, China, South Africa. Kevin, what does that meeting mean to you, the BRICS nation in Johannesburg, South Africa, 22 August 2023?
What it means to me is that if they create this currency backed by gold, Robert, this will be the largest transfer of wealth between nations we will ever see in the history of money.
Right.
And the BRICS.
Let me just say one thing. The BRICS were just five nations a while ago. They estimate by the time the meeting comes in, there may be 41 nations.
That's correct. But I'm going to give people an indication right now.
Let me finish. Oh, sure. They're so pissed off at the United States ripping us off paying fake money. Even the BRICS nations are pissed off. But Americans? No, we have no idea. But the BRICS are pissed. And so they're going to join up and they're going to say, we're not going to take your piece of toilet paper anymore. What does that mean, Kevin?
Well, two things. I want to go back. Those five countries, okay, if people don't understand who they are, you said it, Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa. That's 40% of the population of the world. 3.2 billion people is 40% of the population. Just those five countries, you start adding in more countries. Where's the tipping point? You get to 50% or 60% of the people, the dollar's gone. But here's what it means to me with the transfer of wealth. Let's forget about the fact that there's a little bit of paper in this BRIC currency and we just use gold. Okay, I came from international banking, which you just asked me about, so I understand trade very well. The United States has almost last year a $960 billion trade deficit. If we were dealing just in gold, we were trading gold back and forth, I would have sent $960 billion extra dollars to a country that sent me toys, clothes, cars, everything that depreciates, and they ended up with almost $1 trillion worth of gold. So what happens to that currency? To have that currency, you need to back it by gold. That means there's going to be some gold demand, which probably pushes up the price of gold. It's backed by gold. It pushes up the value of that currency, and it pushes down the value of the dollar. So my deficit keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger, and I keep throwing more and more gold over to them, and I have less. When it's paper dollars, nobody gets it. But you turn it into gold, or let's say I was trading real estate. Heck, the whole real estate market in the United States is worth $70 trillion. If I give $1 trillion to a different country of our real estate, that's 1.5% of our real estate. In 6 years, I've given 10% of our real estate away. That's what it means.
But
our
the good
dollar
news
gets
is,
killed.
The good news is the Barbie movie is coming out, and they're going to sell a lot more Barbie dolls, you know, from China. Yay.
Which will push up the trade deficit. Yeah, we paid $1 trillion extra for Barbie dolls, and we gave them gold for Barbie dolls. You know, it's crazy. It will be the biggest transfer of wealth in the history of nations if this thing goes through. Paper money is going to get worth less and less. And I'm going to tell you something. I think the central banks have been listening to your program last year, because the central banks last year purchased 25% of all of the gold mined last year. Think about this. They can print money and take that printed money that they printed out of thin air, and they went and bought 25% of the 1,250 metric tons of gold central banks purchased last year. They don't even trust their own money.
No, of course not. And then recently, this is what people do not understand, is when the debt ceiling was at 30 trillion or some ungodly amount of number, a trillion seconds is 32,000 years. Think about that. And they had 30 trillion, now it's 31 trillion, but that's the debt they record. There's also off balance sheet debt, which is estimated.
Well, the off balance sheet debt is almost twice as big as the on balance sheet debt, because if you add it all together, we're at $100 trillion. So if you add the Social Security and pensions and Medicare and Medicaid and all the off balance sheet liabilities, our debt is much, much bigger. However, as more and more people retire, that debt will start to becoming on balance sheet debt, because they're going to have to borrow the money to pay those people. And then it switches over to the other side of the equation. So it's a scary situation and how far the dollar could fall if that happens.
The BRICS group is set to introduce a new currency backed by gold, in contrast to the credit-backed US dollar, with countries lining up to join the growing initiative.
The BRICS countries are planning to introduce a new trading currency, which will be backed by gold. More and more countries recently expressed desire to join BRICS.
The one final note I will make is that if you think about the benefits of digital money, there are huge potential gains. It's not just about digital forms of physical currency. You can have programmability, you know, units of central bank currency with expiry dates. You could have, as I argue in my book, a potentially better, and some people might see it, or a darker world where the government decides that units of central bank money can be used to purchase some things, but not other things that it deems less desirable, like, say, ammunition or drugs or pornography or something of the sort. And that is very powerful in terms of the use of a CBDC, and I think also extremely dangerous for central banks. Because ultimately, if you have different units of central bank money with different characteristics, or if you use central bank money as a conduit for economic policies in a very targeted way, or more broadly for social policies, that could really affect the integrity of central bank money and the integrity and independence of central banks. So there are wonderful notions of things that can be done with digital money. But again, I fear that technology could take us to a better place, but equally has the potential to take us to a pretty dark place.
A key difference with the CBDC is that central bank will have absolute control on the rules and regulations that will determine the use of that expression of central bank liability.
The nature of money is going to change quite dramatically. The old systems of trust and of ownership will have to adapt radically.
This is Richard Werner, the top academic scholar in the world on central banking. He wrote the book and did the documentary The Princes of the Yen about the Japanese central bank. Here he is in Malmo, Sweden in May.
The nature of the CBDC, what is it actually going to look like? They never talk about that. Right. But I heard one European central banker tell me what it's going to look like. He saw it and it was around this large and would be implanted under your skin.
CBDC. If that happens, we're done.
They started their CBDC. Maybe we should start having the conversation of, gosh, this looks like the mark of the beast.
COVID makes it accelerates the process of digitalization and automatization. It legitimizes the deployment of mass surveillance, even in democratic countries, and it makes surveillance go under your skin.
Wallet Moore says the $300 chip is the size of a grain of rice. You'd most likely have it implanted in your hand, and once it's activated, you can use it at a checkout by just swiping your hand over the card reader.
I want people to go read Executive Order 14067. Executive Order 14067, signed by Uncle Joe, the 8th of March of 2022, and it went into effect 13 December 2022.
CBDC. If that happens, we're done.
The old systems of trust and of ownership will have to adapt radically.
China's taken over. And China, you know, I heard a couple of people say, well, the dollar will never lose the dollar standard. Are they kidding?
Now the BRICS nations, Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa, have announced plans to develop a new currency.
My name is General Mike Flynn, and I want everyone to know that I stand fully behind Beverly Hills Precious Metals and its owner, Andrew Sorcini.
Since my name is Cash, I am constantly worried about inflation. But to secure your cash going forward, buy into gold and silver today. And you know who shares that ethos? Beverly Hills Precious Metals. Go to bh-pm.com today so you can go buy gold and silver and secure your family's future. bh-pm.com. Call Beverly Hills Precious Metals, get your consultation, buy into gold and silver just like I'm doing today and help secure your family's future. Because it's all about educating yourself. And that's the value, whether you go with Beverly Hills Precious Metals or not. It's a free consultation that gives your family options for financial security going into the future. So that's why you should call Beverly Hills Precious Metals.com for a free consultation today.